Hello, Sobertown. Welcome to the Sobertown podcast. Let's jump on that sober train and ride right into the incredible, wonderful world of sobriety. This morning, we have an amazing sober warrior, a dear friend, somebody that I've been on this journey with from the beginning this time around, a dear friend from South Africa, Horseman. Welcome to Sobertown.
Hi, Drifter. Good to see you.
It's so good to have you here, and I love the music you played on the guitar for us when I got here on the Zoom with you.
Hey, man, it helped me to relax a bit, you know.
Yeah, you're an amazing guitar player. So, Horseman, you're going to share your recovery story with us this morning.
Yeah, I'm privileged, man. I'm really privileged, and I want to start by just saying, you know, this is not an exercise to brag or to preach to others. It's really just, I think I was blessed during my recovery by others that shared their life stories. And I was blessed especially by those that were vulnerable, that shared their brokenness, and that included you.
Yeah, we're very grateful, Horseman. It is a big deal you coming out of your shell. There's so many of us that just have a huge heart for you, and I know they're going to be excited to hear your story too. So thank you.
Hey, man, before we started, we talked about 4 years ago when we met on the IAS app, yourself and me. So the backdrop to that was, as you know, we had the lockdowns happening worldwide in March of 2020. Late March, we got the announcement here in South Africa. Our president got on the air, and I guess like all the presidents worldwide, he told us that we're going to have 2 weeks of lockdown. You know what? The following day, I think it was a couple of days before they brought in all the regulations. But the following day, I remember going to the liquor store, and there was a queue of guys. They were piling up all the way to the parking area. Everybody was buying booze, you know. There were people buying food as well, but there was a lot more people buying booze. Yeah, I was one of them. So I bought wine and I bought spirits. I mean, a lot of booze, because we all, you know, we knew for 2 weeks we're not gonna have access. So I mean, if you think back of it today, it's like weird, huh? Everybody stocked up, and then we got locked up. And of course, in a way, it was like a holiday. Yeah? This is a free holiday, you know. So everybody was at home, and of course, we were drinking and just having a quiet time and what. But of course, after a week or so, there was another announcement saying another 2 weeks, you know. So by early April sometime, we ran out of booze. And then, you know, at first one got a bit nervous about it or so, and then we thought, well, I mean, there was ways to get booze, but we didn't want to go there, so we just ended up saying, let's just, you know, be healthy and use this time also to get a bit more fit and torn. And it was like almost a lockdown, you know, helped me in a big way. So it was like, you know, that's how it started for me. So I'm just going to backtrack, you know, as we go through the story. But before I go further, I just want to tell a bit more about myself. You know, I'm 65 years old. I'm sort of semi-retired, and I've been married for 44 years. My kids are all grown up. I've got a few grandkids. And yeah, I mean, I grew up in an orphanage in Johannesburg, South Africa. My father was a social worker, and we lived at under orphanage and posh. It was a tough life. As part of that, I was also deaf. I got deaf when I was 4 years old. It was an accident, and I lost my hearing. So today I can hear. That's why I can do the score, because we've got some technology that's happening, helping me. But basically, I was stone deaf as a kid. I mean, those days, there was no technology, so I couldn't really, you know, hear stuff and so on. But my parents, I think they meant it well. They put me in a normal school. a normal public school. What? Obviously, that was great because I was learning with other kids, but the downside of it was, you know, the way kids are. I mean, I got nailed because I was deaf. You know, I mean, kids can be quite cruel, no? So that's how I had a bad time, a difficult time. And my dad, he was quiet. He saw stuff happening and he realized he needed to do something. So he got me enrolled in karate. And I think I was 6 years old when I started karate. I was a tiny tot, but I learned to punch, you know. And then as I grew up, I started fighting and I got very good with it. I mean, later, in fact, I was an instructor and I had a karate school. So why am I sharing this stuff? The relevancy is one of the things I've discovered, yeah, both in the IOS app and, you know, among sober people in recovery, is just that, one just sees it, you know, if you're a fighter, you can see it if other people can't fight. They've never learned to fight. So the thing where karate helped me is, it's a different thing, but our battle in recovery is essentially a fight with an enemy that wants to take us down. And the taking down is not just like in a fight, you know. He wants to take you out permanently. It's almost like the fight cage type thing, you know. You fight to death. And when I realized that, you know, it did something to me in the sense that I realized if I don't fight, this thing is going to kill me. So that's the first thing I just want to share with people, you know, this recovery thing is no good to be nice with the enemy or to try play ball with him or, you know, negotiate with him or whatever. He's not interested. He wants to take you down. He wants to kill you. And we need to learn how to fight.
This is the arena.
Yeah. Yes. The arena. You're right. And it's like the arena, like you say. I mean, those exactly. So then late in my life, my father got sick and I was sent to boarding school and my family had a farm and I ended up on the farm and there were horses. So I'm just explaining a bit about, you know, why I chose his name, a horseman. And I got into horses and I was really, I love horses. So again, why am I sharing this? You know, horses are amazing animals. They accept you no matter who you are, right? But they can also sense you. They have we call it horse sense, right? So horses are amazing with that. They can sense us better than any human being, in fact. In fact, not many years ago, I was involved with another horseman we lived, you know, before. His nickname was Rocky. He was a big guy, but he was an expert on using horses to treat people in addiction and people that are that have been abused, all right? And it's amazing when you work with horses and people like that. In those days, I wasn't part of the addiction thing then, but I mean, there were women that were abused that I observed, you know, during these sessions because I was kind of part of the team. And again, why am I sharing this? Is, you know, it's about the authenticity aspect of our recovery. Is that people need to get to a point where you are authentic and drop all the stuff that you sort of holding in front of you. If you don't get authentic on this thing, then I think, it's difficult. You need to really start being honest with yourself. And that's, you know, with the horses, I just, you know, but now this is human beings, you know, it's difficult for us. The horse is different. I mean, you know, they don't tell us about your sins and stuff like that. But when you're with human beings, it's different. What I'm saying is, in recovery, we need to learn to be authentic with those around us, starting with our families, starting with our dear ones, starting with those that are in recovery with us, to be authentic and vulnerable. What? Not easy for me as a fighter, a big guy. I mean, I weigh 140 kilograms. So I'm a big guy. So now I'm just going to move on to, you know, life. So now I've grown up and I'm here in South Africa. And I'm just giving you a bit of a view here of, you know, the environment that I lived in, a bit of context. So South Africa, I think most of you know South Africa with what we had. We had apartheid here. We had racism, all of that. So I grew up with that. All right. And it was difficult. I mean, as part of that, you know, we were called up to the army. All right. So again, I'm sharing these things just to tell you sort of the backdrop to some of the stuff we go through. Yeah, I mean, I know the Americans, you go to war, you come back with a PTSD and all that. For us, it was different in the sense we had a local war, but we had, I think it was actually worse than PTSD in the sense that we had to deal with the fact that we were part of this apartheid thing. So I really battled with that because I didn't want to be in the army. In fact, I refused to go border, all right? I didn't want to be involved, you know, killing black people. So then a big thing, again, you know, if you do that, you become an outcast, right? And that was very hard for me. So we actually ended up nearly immigrating to Australia, to Canada. We actually ended up staying because we still love the country, you know? But I've got black friends, I've got brown friends. I mean, you know, what I'm saying is that, you know, the recovery thing is colorblind, right? You know, it's often we hear this thing that, you know, it's more these people or those people that are affected. But I've just noted it's completely colorblind. It's a universal thing. You know, if you go on the internet, you can see people on the recovery all over the world. There's no country in the world where people are not battling with this thing, right? So, yeah, I mean, so just another thing I want to mention is, you know, I ended up being a computer guy, right? So all of these things I'm just saying so that you can understand why I ended up drinking, right? Because I didn't want to do computers. I was a creative nature type person, and I wanted to study to be a pastor, to help people, stuff like that. But I ended up being a computer guy. So that moved me all over the world. So I ended up working in Germany, the UK, me, Australia. So as part of that thing, you know, I was away from home often, corporate life, job, you know, a lot of pressure. And, you know, being an introverted type person, all right, I often, you know, I think when the threat started with me was I had a guy that worked with me that was like my sales senior, if you like. His name is Mark, and he kind of got me into this thing, you know, have a drink before you do a presentation or whatever, have a couple of drinks. And then, you know, if you're pretty more relaxed, you do your presentation. And even more important, when you're out with customers, you know, that's the way to get a deal, right? I mean, you sit down with the customers, everybody is having a good time. And before you know it, you sign the orders because everybody, you know, is having a drink and having a good time and sign the order. And, you know, that's how you did it, right? But it happened very slowly, sort of like, you know, you don't know it. It started, you know, a few drinks, and then, I mean, I never had booze in my house. I remember I never had booze in my house. But then over time, I ended up buying stuff, you know, keep the booze at home. And, you know, it's a gradual thing that happens. It's quite insidious. I'm not sure what the word is.
That's a good word, insidious, Horseman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So you didn't have booze into your house until later on in life, then, is what you're telling me.
Yeah. You know, I didn't grow up with this stuff. You know, my dad and my mom, they weren't drinkers. It was not part of our house, you know. And even as a young person, when I got married, in fact, my wedding, we didn't have booze at the wedding. You know, people bought, they could order their drinks, you know, at the wedding. But, you know, that's how we started. And then when I started working, you know, I had this culture of drinking it out. And that's slowly, you know, there's an old saying something like bad company corrupts good character, right? And it's not like I was working with people that are evil. You know, I mean, they were reasonably good people. You know, I mean, they professional people, what. But the point is, the influence on me was not good, you know? And yeah. So a bit of a diversion, you know. I'm just going to jump it around a bit, you know, hopefully you can bear with me. But during this whole career, you know, a couple of times things happened. And at the time, I didn't realize it, but like once I ended up in a clinic for depression, right? And I was there for depression, and I think it was maybe a month that I was there. But I remember 2 weeks into the clinic, we were allowed to go out for the evening, you know? It's sort of like one of the perks they let you. So because I wasn't in for drinking, I was in for depression. They let me go out with some of the other guys, and we ended up in a restaurant, and we had a pizza and what, and before we knew it, all of us were drunk, right? And when I got back to the clinic, my therapist, when I, you know, obviously they weren't happy with me and the other guys. But the point is, my therapist asked me this question. He said, "Why are you here?" I said, "No, I'm depressed." He said, "No, you're not here because you're depressed. You're here because you got a drinking problem." And I didn't like it. I was, you know, tapping your shoulder. I'm not a drinker. I don't have a problem, you know. But I'll never forget that day when he said to me that, when he said those words to me, it kind of really later, it made me think. Slowly, I started realizing that maybe this guy is right, you know. And so, you know, a couple of these incidents happened. Another one that happened is one night, I was having sleeping problems as well, okay, because of all of this, you know, a lot of job pressure and stuff, so you can't sleep, right? And I was taking sleeping pills, and one night I remember I took a sleeping pill and I was drinking some wine as well. Stupid me. And yeah, next moment I was out. And I ended up in hospital, you know, the blackout. I nearly died. I mean, apparently this particular medication I was taking, only later I discovered a lot of people die from it. If you take it with alcohol and you get a blackout, you know, you die. So I was lucky. But these incidents kind of made me realize that I've got a problem. So then fast forward, back in the ICU, you know, when I was in ICU 2016, I did go in for drinking. But, you know, it was to treat me and get me better and what. And then while I was there, the specialist that was treating me, the last day when he came to see me, I asked him some questions about everything. And then he looked at me, he said, "You're lucky." I said, what do you mean? "You nearly died. You just don't know it." And he showed me the symptoms, you know, where I was with my pancreas, my liver, and everything.
So in 2016 in ICU, they told you what, you had liver problems and problems with the pancreas from drinking?
Yeah, yes, that's right. So I was sober for a few months after that, and then I started drinking again. And then back to the lockdowns. So, you know, I was sober from April, right? And then I was sober for 18 months. You remember that? I ended up being sober for, I think, up to October 2021. So one of the things I wanted to also share here is that in my case, the thing was this acquired taste thing, you know, got to do with the thing that the wine we drink, in my case, I love red wine, but it's an acquired taste, right? Because, I mean, today, if you, well, let's take a different example. If you take my grandkids when they're here, one day they made a mistake and they took a sip from my glass. You know, I mean, he nearly got sick. You know, Opa, what is this? You know, it's terrible stuff, you know? So, I mean, we drink this stuff and we just think it's nice. We think it tastes good. But it's an acquired taste, right? So, yeah. So in October, I relapsed, right? And I really battled. Well, I was here back in IIS app, back in, back out, you know, all the time. So fast-tracking forward now. So September last year, I'm in relapse, right? Since October 21. In and out, up and down. And then September last year, I left the app. Right? I was fed up. Because I was embarrassed. I kept on going back and I felt, you know, I'm not winning this. And that's when I connected with you, right? On your truck. And I'm telling this part because, you know, it's not about you and me. I'm sharing this so that people can just see what connection of individuals can and should do. And the fact that you, when I contacted you, you were willing to, you know, talk with me while you were on your road. I mean, that was amazing. You know, you didn't judge me. In fact, you just kept on talking to me, and you heard me when I was saying things, and you never made me feel bad about it. And then on October, I'll never forget it, October the 4th last year, you sent me an audio clip. Normally you send me videos riding your truck, and I always enjoyed those. You're riding through North Carolina, and I recognize some of those mountains because I've worked in the area in the triangle and, you know, with IBM and stuff. That was great. But that voice recording, you must have made it at a point where you were quiet or something, because it was a long recording. I still have it, in fact. I've saved it. The words I'm reading now is what you said in that recording. You said you might have been trying this many times. Well, this is my part that I added, sort of like an intro. You're wanting to figure out why you keep on drinking. Now, don't be too hard on yourself. That's the message you kept on giving me. And then you said, yes, I know, because you've been there, you drifted. And but I realized, this guy, you're at my level. And then you said these very important words. You're preparing yourself for that day where you finally decide that, you know, I just don't want this or need this. I just don't need this in my life anymore. And I want to try something new. Now, I tell you, when I heard those words, I put that recording probably a million times. It's just, it was like a prophecy to me. Yeah. And then, you know, it was still October last year, right? And those words just kept on, you know, being in front of me. And in January, as you said in your note, there's a day that comes. You know, so it's kind of unpredictable. It's not, another important point is, you know, it's not like I was applying willpower or anything like that. And I don't want to, you know, I know there's a lot of debate around willpower and all of that, but the point is, I don't want to get into that. But the point is, for me, it was never about willpower. It was what I was thinking. And when I came to that point where I said, I want to try something new, it was like a switch was being flicked in me. So on the 26th of January of this year, when it was a Friday, I remember we did some drinking on the Friday night. It wasn't bad, a couple of drinks. And then it was on a Saturday, normally the afternoon we would go shopping. My wife would go, or I would go. And when she asked me, I said, no, we're not going to buy, you know? And she was like, well, what's going on, you know? But no, we're not going to buy. And that's it. The switch have flipped. It was like, boom. And that's it. You know, the point I want to make here is that I think if people can just get to the point where you think correctly about this, and I think this links up with a lot of stuff you guys are talking about on Rewired and all of that. You know, it's about how we think about these things. If we can get to the point where we see the whole thing for what it is, it's actually not difficult. It's, you know, if you're a normal thinking person and you can just see the whole thing in front of you and you realize what you're doing to yourself, it's easy. You just decided. I don't want to do this anymore. I want to try something new. So that's a key thing that I wanted to park. So what else helped me? I mean, yes, so what, you know, the alcohol literature that you all read, all of them, you know, it's a lot of good stuff. But also there's some crap out there. You know, there's books. There's a lot of books out there. A lot of people are writing books and stuff. I'm just saying, I've also seen some crap. So people need to watch out what you're reading. You know, I've seen some others on the forum that agrees with someone like Da, you know, and overseas. Well, now, there are a couple of us that realize that you have to be careful with almost what you're reading, because there's some crap happening out there, you know. But there are some good ones. I mean, Catherine Gray, Annie Grace, and Ellen Carr, a couple of good writers. But
one Craig Beck is another good one, too.
Yeah. So talking about the literature and all that, I think what I also want to bring in here is that, and I know, often on these photos and stuff, we don't talk about religion that much, but I need to say, you know, that religion, me being a Christian, played a big role in my recovery. And ultimately, you know, I need to say this, that the words of Jesus Christ, you know, his words, especially in the gospel, they're powerful words, right? Come to me and I will give you life, you know, just an example. So just want to mention someone also here. I've mentioned some other people, but there's a doctor from Brasilia, Dr. Augusto Curry, that he was a psychiatrist. And remember, in the back of my head, I dealt with a lot of psychiatrists, you know, in my life. And I think we've all, you know, I'm not saying there's an issue there, but the point is, we're talking about chemicals here, right? A lot of the time, people end up just being on chemicals. I myself went through that, you know? So this Dr. Curry, what I enjoyed about him is he's a psychiatrist, but he discovered, he was an atheist, in fact. And he started reading the Gospels from a philosophy point of view, right? And he was blown away by the words of Jesus. And he wrote a book about it. The book's name is Think and Make It Happen. This book just talks about the words of Jesus, you know? But what I said earlier, it comes back to thinking correctly. And Jesus, in many ways, in the way, I think, he taught people to think correctly. And this is what this doctor, you know, he unpacks it so beautifully. So I the Bible and the words of Jesus played a huge role in my recovery. And then, of course, but on a lighter note, what we're sharing with you on, you know, in Yesterday Africa, we talk about a word called fastbite, right?
I thought it was bazbite. Say it again. Say it again.
Yeah, I like you saying it. So, you know, that's a local slang for, if you take a bulldog and you take a piece of rope and you throw it or you hold it, you know, the bulldog tends to grab it, right? And, you know, they will hold on to it. And you can string him. You can do whatever you want with him. He will not let go. You know, that's what we call fastbait.
Fastbait,
yeah. So that's another thing I think, you know, in the same line as fighting, you know, that we need to learn to fastbait, to hold on. And once you hold on, you mustn't let go, you know. And that, why that's so important, you asked me about, you know, September last year, January this year. The one thing I didn't do is I didn't divorce myself from people, you know, that like I stayed in contact with you, you know. I think what I often see with people who are going through tough times, especially those that keeps on falling down, right? They go into isolation because they feel bad, and you know, so and that's the biggest mistake people can make, really. I would just want to encourage people that no matter what you're going through, no matter how bad you're queuing up, is just stay connected. Just find someone or a few people around you that you can link with and that you have a relationship with and work on that. I think that's probably one of the biggest things for me is that one is to do that, is to stay connected.
And when you do that, Horseman, one of them may say something that really resonates with you, and that you'll grab it, Vazbite, right? You'll grab a hold of it. You won't let it go. And then maybe one day it will change your life.
Exactly. That's what I did. I fastbait those words that you gave me last year, October. You know, I shoot it. I just kept on shooting it. It probably was totally, you know, it was like a ball that got screwed up, you know, when the dogs, when they grab an old soccer ball or something. I used to have a dog with an old leather ball, and he would shoot a bad leather ball, you know, completely. And that's really what we're talking about, you know. So there's another thing I just want to bring out here, and that is this whole thing of, and it still relates to what I'm saying about thinking a lot, is, you know, that I made these drawings of old Gollum, right? The trickster. So that's another thing I want to share with people, is that we need to visualize, you've always said it, the addictive voice, right? The trickster, all that. I think it's important that people visualize this enemy and you know, as part of it, like talk to him. That's what I did, you know.
So let's let the viewers know what you're talking about, because for your attic voice, you use Gollum from the Lord of the Rings as the enemy. That's your attic voice. And
Now, for me, you know, it's something that I read, I think in Anthony's book, she said, you know, get an image in your head of something that, you know, is evil, you know. When I watched that movie and I saw the way Gollum, you know, acted, I mean, this evil little bastard, and he's always conniving.
Precious, and always that ring, precious. Right?
Yes. So I started using his image, you know. I made these pictures to myself. Doing my first trick, that helped me so many times. I had these images on my phone, and I'll never forget, many times I would be driving, because I often travel, you know. And when you're driving back home, I would be having these cravings or whatever. And then I remember one day I stopped in a town about half an hour from, and I was going to go into the liquor store. I was ready to go. And I was far into my recovery. And I took my phone out, and I had this picture that I've made of old Gollum. you know, looking at, you guys know, I've been making these pictures on iOS where I made a picture of a glass of wine and a column hanging over it and, you know, sort of like a real shocker. And I sat there in the street right outside the liquor store looking at that picture. And I looked at it and I have a couple of them. So I looked at them and, you know, the image, just looking at the image made me think, you know, it sounds stupid, eh? And then I just felt that relief coming over because it's like piece one always says, you know, play forward, you know? So when I look at the image, it asked me to play forward because the image shows me a BMW. That was my favorite car I used to drive when I was doing bad things. So I see the BMW and I see the blood that I put there and I see Gollum and I see the wine and I play it forward. I'm saying, if I go in here now and I'm going to buy the boots, it's going to be like that again. All right. And, you know, it just releases you. It's, well, you know, why am I doing this? And so that's helped me a lot.
And it gets you just a couple minutes past the breaking point where you can get on the other side of it before you go in and purchase that too, right?
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, we're kind of getting to the end. Yeah. I just want to say, you know, my motto that I've always had on the IIS app is love never fails, right? Everybody knows me by that.
Boom. Love never fails. Right. Yes.
So that comes out of the Bible, 1 Corinthians 13:8, right? And, you know, these principles, I'm again saying it, these principles from the Bible, like Dr. Kay would study did, these principles are powerful ones. And, you know, if you're of a different religion or different philosophy or whatever, all I'm saying is find stuff that resonates with you to principles that will guide you, that you can use to step on. So in my case, it was this love never fails thing. So as part of this, I need to share something about my daughter, right? So my daughter, Nadia, she's the only person's name that I've been, you know, mentioning. Because I've tried to stay private, you know, with my whole dealings with IAS and so on. But I've mentioned her and people know that I've got a daughter named Nadia. So I just want to say, and it relates to this love never fails, right? Is 3 years ago, she was in an accident, Nadia, and she nearly died. And, you know, related to that, she and myself, we've been walking a long road together, you know, with addiction. I've had my problems and she's had her problems. And, you know, it's been harder in the family. So since I've made the decision in January, right, you know, life goes on and she lives here nearby us. So she's part of my life. All right. And she sees what's happening. And I'm seeing this, you know, because it's so important we realize that example, you know, is much more powerful than words. But I think what I'm seeing is also for people to realize that how wonderful it can be if you look back one day. So I'm seeing this as a motivator for people to realize that one of the benefits of being sober is how your family and your loved ones can get back to you. Because remember, our drinking, my drinking, doesn't do good in my family, right? I mean, drinking destroys our relationships in a big way. And trust is one of the things that, you know, our kids and our family, they don't trust us because we tend to, we say one thing and we do another thing. So I just want to read a letter that my daughter Nadia wrote me a week ago. All right. Is that okay?
Absolutely. 100,000%.
All right. So she wrote me this letter. Hi, Daddy. Sorry, it's a bit late for messages, but one gets moments of revelation. I miss our late night chats, and I'm also so proud of the change that you are currently focusing on. One day at a time. I'm your addict daughter, so I'm not going to praise unnecessarily. I support you as best as I can right now. When you posted that story of broken things and people, wow, it really touched me. This pair of sneakers, and then she had a photo of sneakers. He's 12 years old. I ran them over those 4 months of rehab until they were properly broken. Every morning, 7 o'clock or six, we got up. He can toast waited for us, and after wash and clean up early morning routines, she went running. So she's sitting here just to say also that she's been also on this path of recovery. And in fact, a day or two ago, she told me she's been clean now for 8 months off the meth.
All right. Boom. Congratulations, Washman. Right.
And then she writes, she says, I don't like the term pride, but I'm just glad with you, my daddy, and I'm so happy to see my father's eyes white and less angry. I love you deeply, and the drugs that I also know so well and that you are fighting with now, it inspires me. My spirit is a bit low, but I can see what Abba is doing, and it gives me hope. I always cling to hope. The wheel of life turns slowly, you know? I've seen it in her life, in my life. It turns slowly, you know? We've talked about people, you know, that we see, and it takes time, you know? It takes lots of time. We can't squeeze or force anyone, you know, to just, boom, you know, get better. It's like, you know, we want to push a button and say, let's get better. It takes time. Unfortunately, obviously, we want people to recover quickly. But I think we need to realize everyone's journey is unique. And, you know, we need to be patient and just walk the path with each other.
So, Horseman, we've talked about this. And I think it's so cool that you're actually a lighthouse. And we've talked about how lighthouses, they don't go around the coast looking for boats to save. They stand where they're built. They shine their light, and the boats are able to navigate towards them. And that's what you're doing with Nadia. And that's what we do with others. We just stand there, shine our light, and let them see the beautiful things that are happening in our lives in recovery. And congratulations, you're doing that with your daughter, man. How exciting is that?
Yeah, it's I think it's a fruit, you know, that one is, it's a unexpected benefit, you know, that we get. And there's some other, I've noted here some other things. What did I gain, you know? There's a long list, but number one for me is happiness. You know, I'm a happy person again. What is the price of happiness? You know, I mean, why do we live in a life of perpetual sadness? Depression in my case. I was having depression, and I was in denial for many years that my depression was being caused by the alcohol. Right. And now I've got happiness, and it's costing me nothing. It's not costing money, you know. I mean, it's like ridiculous if you think of it.
I know, isn't it insane that you were paying to be depressed by buying your booze?
Exactly. I mean, you know, isn't that crazy? And then the other thing is, like, you know, the simple joys we have with let's say our grandchildren. You know, I remember when I was drinking, my grandchildren are here. It's not that I don't see them and I don't enjoy them, but the point is, if you're drinking, your mind is on the drinking, right? And you're too busy drinking. And they also, you know, it's funny how kids are, right? I don't think we always realize it, but kids are very sensitive. When you're drinking, they know you're drinking, you know? They sense that you don't want to be bothered with, you know? So now when my kids come here, they act so differently, you know, because I'm sober. And that's a benefit, huh? Amazing benefit.
Didn't you even let one of your granddaughters paint your fingernails, Horseman?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We had a painting party. Yeah, I mean, it was funny. And they loved it, you know. I mean, they could paint my face and everything, and they just loved it.
And you have big fingers. And by the way, 145 kilograms is 315 pounds. You're a big man.
Wow. Hey, man, good stuff. So, you know, I'm close to the end, yeah. So I just want to say I'm exhilarated. You know, that word comes out of Ellen Carr's book. It's a word that I never used, right? Exhilaration. But when I read Ellen's, he's almost got a whole chapter on it, you know, how exhilaration. And when I read that chapter, I realized I didn't have that in my life. You know, I used to have it when I was younger. But the booze took all of that away. It devastated my exhilaration, right? So nowadays, that's the word that I use. I'm exhilarated. You know, I can feel it, you know? And back to the words that we said, I just don't need the devastation in my life anymore. I'm living exhilaration now, right? And it's so great. This morning, my wife, I was up here early, 5 o'clock. And I was in the kitchen and stuff, and she came to me and she started crying. I said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Why are you upset?" You know, like we normally do. We guys always, you know, when the woman cries, we think, "What's wrong?" You know, she said, "No, I'm crying because I'm happy." You see, yeah, on a Saturday morning at 5 o'clock. On a Saturday morning, you were normally out. You were out till 11, 12, even later. Now you're up at 5. Yeah, sneaking it out of my kitchen and stuff.
I love that.
You know? So where am I now? I mean, looking forward, I'm studying to be a certified counselor, right? I can only do this because I'm sober. You know? I wouldn't be able to do this if I was drinking. Because I need to put, you know, I need to study again. I'm 65 years old, you know, so. The study is, you know, so you need to study. And I've been studying. This past week, I did a presentation to a group of people about the topic, part of the studies. And afterwards, they got up and they clapped hands for me. You know, I was so blessed. Because I realized now suddenly I can share again of myself. And I can hopefully, down the line, I can counsel other people who are going through these kind of battles. But I would never be able to do this if I was drinking. And that's what the enemy wanted, though. You know, that's why he wanted to keep me down. Anyway. So I just want to thank everyone. You know, I mean, there's some people that, you know, Peace One, Catherine, you know, she helped me from day one. You know, she's got a new name now, but she was Handless. Sarah Trump, Eileen, Slightly Whoopless, Wellness, Pollyanna, Laura, Spiritual Sniper. I mean, there's a lot of people that walked this path with me. And you know, what's so great now is now that I'm back, these people are still there. Some of them have been, you know, they're far down the road, but they're still there. They're still supporting me. And I just want to thank, I want to thank you, Drifter. I mean, I want to thank you for your part in my life.
Well, I want to thank you too, Horseman, because getting sober is a very difficult thing. And going through trauma, and then when you get around people and you start sharing like we did through messaging, as we're shedding those skins or those masks that we've worn all these years, it's really difficult. And then, you know, you and I had some ups and downs through all of that, but you taught me so many lessons while I was getting sober that I value today. You've helped me become a better person, and I'm very grateful for that.
Hey, buddy. I was saying to someone the other day, you know, I've got a good friend. He's a trucker in America, you know. You know, the soak was looking at me saying, what do you mean? I said, no, there's a guy that I know in America. He's a trucker. And we talk, you know, almost every day. And so this is amazing. You know, we have a relationship across, you know, the internet, yeah, and what. And it's just amazing. So I also want to thank my family for their support through all these years. And mostly my wife as well. I mean, you know, she's the one that stood by me.
For 44 years, Horseman, congratulations.
The other benefit, you know, goes without saying, is that those special relationships, this takes a new life. You know, it's like a second life that we're having now. It's like, I don't know, it's just amazing.
You get to live your best life now, Horseman.
Yeah, amen. So I want to finish by just reading a song. It's a guy, his name is Andre Crouch. He's an African-American guy. You may remember him, Andre Crouch. He was a big gospel singer. But he wrote a song. I'm just going to read the words. These words, it's like, I think it's the story of my life, kind of, you know. So the words go like this: Amazing grace shall always be my song of praise. For it was grace that brought me liberty. I do not know just why he came to love me so. He looked beyond my fault and saw my need. I shall forever lift my eyes to Calvary to view the cross where Jesus died for me. How marvelous the grace that caught my falling soul. He looked beyond my fault and saw my need.
Boom. Beautiful.
Buddy, that's my story.
Horseman, I'm so very grateful to sit here with you today. I'm honored. Thank you so much for coming on here in Sobertown. And I get to see your smiling face and share your recovery story with us. I'm so grateful, my friend.
Have a good talking, man. And I hope next year we can talk and there's going to be more stuff. Hey?
Yeah, I would love to do that. And give your amazing wife a huge hug for me.
I will do. And do that with Jamie and kids as well, eh?
Okay, I will. Thank you, Horseman.
Thank you, Drifter.